Welcome to the 367th episode of Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, but my terrific co-host, Keita Roberts, is on assignment tonight, so we'll have to get along without her. We know that you can't travel yet, but also know things will change, hopefully sooner than later. In the meantime, we're continuing this weekly show so that a half hour of armchair travel will take you back to the good old days and help you understand that they will come back soon. Tonight, our guest is Aaron Reed, Army veteran, author, and fantastic fly fisherman. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, Aaron. We're happy to have you.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Really glad to be here. Appreciate the opportunity, and that's the nicest thing anyone said about me all week.
Oh, good. Well, let's hope things get even better. First, Aaron, let's clear up a popular misconception. What's the difference between fishing and fly fishing?
You know, Dan, Tom Brokaw once said that if fishing is a religion, fly fishing is high church. That's not really so true anymore. We're a lot less stuffy than maybe the people on the sport were in the old days. But the main difference between fly fishing and fishing with conventional gear, spinning reels or a push-button Zebco or a bait caster, is that in fly fishing, the angler is casting the weight of the line, and with spin fishing or other conventional gear, you're casting the weight of the lure or the bait. So in fly fishing, really, it's the line that is you know, transferring all that energy to the rod and back out to the fly.
Okay, your new book is called Fly Fishing Austin and Central Texas. First of all, let me say you're talking to a novice. If I went fishing, the only thing I'd catch is a cold. Coming in from left field with no experience, how would you get me started?
Well, if you were to come down here and do it, and you should come, you know, give me a holler when you come down for South by Southwest or something, and we'll go hit the water. But I think we'd probably first stop at Mesquite Creek Outfitters for a local craft beer, make sure you're relaxed, and then walk on down to one of the parks on the San Gabriel River and start casting. It's not rocket science. It's something anyone can pick up in, you know, 30 minutes or an hour, at least well enough to go out and have fun and catch a few fish.
Well, your book is huge, almost 400 pages and 300 color photographs. But is it for the novice, the experienced fly fisherman, or both?
You know, I hope that there's something for everyone in there. One of my goals in the book was to lower barriers to entry to the sport. So I wanted to provide enough information that someone could feel comfortable getting started in the sport. At least they would know what questions to ask when they walked into the fly shop. But I also hope there are some things in there that will be a pleasant surprise to some of the folks who have been at it for, you know, 10 or 15 or 30 or 50 years.
Okay. Why did you write the book, Aaron, and how long did it take to research it?
You know, I've fished my entire life since I was a child. And I started off with conventional gear. And I've written about fishing for at least the last 20 years for magazines and whatnot. And I was given the opportunity to do this book, and it was tracking with what I was already doing. I was already poring over the roads of Texas, the big Atlas Gazette. I was looking at Google Maps, satellite view, and trying to find stretches of water that people had not been fishing a whole lot or that nobody knew about that looked promising. And I was documenting my trips, and then I was given the opportunity to propose this book and, actually at least get paid gas money for it. And it just seemed like a great idea. And I wanted to share my love for fly fishing. I think everyone should have the opportunity to get out on a creek and experience nature in this way.
Aaron, is it fair to say that your book is one-stop shopping for the prospective fly fisherman in general, or are you addressing the fly fisherman in Central Texas only?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, it is a hyper-local guide. We have 49 detailed routes and more than 100 legal access points, all within about an hour of the Stevie Ray Vaughan statue down at Auditorium Shores on the Colorado River. And So in that sense, it's a where-to guide for Central Texas. But I think a lot of the things that I talk about in the book with regard to tips and tactics and where to find fish and the life history of the fish and why someone might want to go fly fishing and the gear they might want to use, that's probably applicable to certainly any warm water fishery in the country. It's something you can go out and do in Connecticut, New Jersey, you know, wherever. And in fact, I have friends who live in those places and do that. So hopefully there's something in there for everyone, but it really is made for folks who are coming to Texas or think they might visit Texas and want to pack a fly rod when they come.
We're talking with Aaron Reed, the author of Fly Fishing Austin and Central Texas. Aaron, since this is a travel show, please tell us how big the sport of fly fishing is in general, and where are some of the best places to try it around the country?
Well, it's a very old sport. I think people started writing about it probably back in the early 1500s, I mean, that we know of, possibly before then, in the UK. In 2016, the American Fly Fishing Trade Association put the number of participants, and that's someone who fly fishes at least once a year, at about 4.5 million. That sounds like a lot, but it's just a small sliver of the 38.5 million fishing license holders in the country. Despite that, the industry is valued at around $1 billion per year. So it's a fairly significant industry, and there are a number of very strong U.S.-based brands and manufacturers who are involved in this. And as far as the best places to fish, I like to think Central Texas is one of them. More and more people are agreeing. When we think of places we want to go fishing, if we want to go away, we think of the Mountain West, New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana. Those places top a lot of lists. Fly fishers in the Midwest and Northeast chase smallmouth bass and native brook trout. And then, of course, there's a pretty robust saltwater fly fishing scene, particularly in Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. So it's really all over the country. There's probably no place that you could live where you would not have an opportunity to fly fish for something.
You know, I had no idea that there were so many great places to do fly fishing around Austin. Your book says there are more than 100 legal access points, which you mentioned a minute ago, and more than four dozen detailed wade and paddle routes all within an hour of Austin. That's incredible.
And that's not even all of them, Dan. I mean, there are, you know, that was not an exhaustive list. I tried to be fairly comprehensive and at least include some representative waters for all of those streams or the types of fishing that there is. But there are probably, you know, another 49 great reaches of water and another 100 legal access points that people can discover on their own. And I hope they will. I hope folks will use the book as a jumping off point to go out and find their own favorite places.
Well, since we mentioned the word legal, are there things the fly fisherman needs to know about river law in Texas before setting out?
You know, there are. Texas river laws, it's a strange beast. The rules are different here than they are in any other state in the union, mostly as a result of our history as a Spanish colony, a Mexican province, and later as a republic, and the way that we entered the union through a treaty. But basically, if a stream bed is an average of 30 feet wide, or it has historically been used for commerce, anyone can use it for a legal purpose, which includes hunting, sometimes fishing, paddling, hiking, swimming, camping even sometimes. And whether it has water in it year-round or not is immaterial. The stream bed is considered a public property. So that puts us ahead of some states like Colorado, for instance, where you know, the water may be a public resource, but the stream bed is privately owned and you can't drop an anchor or put your foot down. But you can float over it. The downside is that we have very little other public land in Texas, only about 4% of the state. And the river banks above the high water line, essentially, or the gradient boundary, are oftentimes private property. So we have to be careful to respect those private property rights and go out of our way to get along with adjacent landowners as well.
Does your book give advice on selecting rods, reels, and lines? And also, how expensive is the equipment?
Yeah, for sure. It does reflect my quirks and my tastes, and I prefer what we call light line rods or ultralight rods, you know, usually 2 or 3 weight rods, which are fairly dainty. And I prefer fiberglass rods just because of the way that they load and how durable the material is. But I walk readers through the options and why they might prefer one type of rod over another, and different scenarios where you might want, say, a 9-foot rod versus a 7-foot rod, or a 5-weight rod versus a 3-weight rod. And you can certainly spend thousands of dollars on a fly rod or a rod and reel combo, but you don't have to. There are some terrific rods out there for $100, less than $200, certainly, and reels for any budget. We are kind of in a golden age of fly fishing equipment right now.
Can you get it from Amazon?
You can get it from Amazon. And if you don't have a fly shop in your area, that's a fine thing to do. If you do have a fly shop in your area, I would highly recommend that you go in, make friends with those folks. They'll be happy to see you. And if they're doing things right, they will welcome you with open arms and make you feel comfortable. Even if you don't know anything, everyone starts at the same place, knowing nothing about this, and let you test a whole bunch of different rods and find one that fits your style and fits your purpose, and they will give you expert advice. Most fly shops would rather have you as a lifetime customer rather than just make a quick sale. So I always recommend that people visit their local fly shop. Prices will be just as good as on Amazon, and you'll get a lot better customer service. And fly shops are also community centers for anglers. I mean, it's where you go to find out, you know, what's hatching right now, what flies are working, what water's fishing well, and just to meet like-minded people. They're a great asset to the community.
How strong do you need to be? I mean, I could picture a short little woman under 5 foot. How strong do you have to be to do this?
You know, it's a lot like baseball, something you know a whole lot about, or maybe a golf swing. I mean, you can really crank on that golf ball, but that's not really what it's about. It's really about your form and about your timing, right? And the same with baseball bat. And it's the same thing with a fly rod. The rod itself does most of the work. You don't have to be strong at all. As a matter of fact, women seem to pick it up even quicker than men do if they're brand new to the sport. And we're seeing more and more women get involved in the sport, which is terrific. But typically there's a little less ego involved and a little more patience. I don't want to make too broad of a characterization, but that's been my experience so far. And so happily we're seeing just a ton of women get involved in the sport and, girls doing their own trips, and there's not a guy in sight, and they're doing just fine.
So you can easily be the Jose Altuve of fly fishing.
100%. You can be a little guy and still make a beautiful cast. Or you can be a kid and make a beautiful cast. I mean, no question about it.
You know, I love the idea that in your book you point out common flora and fauna along central Texas streams. How did you get all the information on that? You have to be a botanist, too.
You know, I'm not a biologist, but I play one on TV sometimes. I'm fortunate that from my experience working at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and just because this is the way my interests go, that I know a lot of really talented, knowledgeable fisheries biologists and botanists and people who I could go to with these questions and say, okay, what is this and why is it this way and what's the difference between this animal and that animal or this flower and that flower? And they were extraordinarily patient with me. My former colleagues at Parks and Wildlife Department, as well as folks at the University of Texas and other people that I've known for a long time. And I'm really grateful for their expertise. So if I made any errors in the book, those are mine, not theirs. But I will tell you that apps like iNaturalist or PlantSnap, those are also handy to get a first look at, you know, try to figure out what something is and narrow it down. So there are all sorts of resources out there.
We're talking with Aaron Reed, the author of Fly Fishing Often in Central Texas. Aaron, what about wildlife, especially alligators and jaguars? The first thing I thought of when I pictured wading into a stream was running into an alligator.
You know, it's funny. I was actually surprised when I discovered there were alligators still in some of these Central Texas streams, including the one that runs, you know, real close to my house here. And I thought, I mean, I knew historically there had been, but it turns out there are still a few hanging on. And this is kind of the western edge of the American alligators range up here in Central Texas. And so they're not common. We do sometimes see them. Someone took one out of the Lampasas River a couple of years ago that was 11 feet long. That's a pretty large reptile. I grew up with alligators on the Texas coast, and it was not uncommon at all to see them when we were fishing, and we didn't worry about it too much. And I certainly don't worry about it here. The jaguars, sadly, disappeared from Texas about the middle of the last century. But we still have plenty of bobcats and also the occasional mountain lion padding through his territory here. So that's always exciting. And if anyone has the opportunity to see either of those predators, that's a real thrill.
You wrote about paddling routes. Does your book include maps of the best ones? And also, do you list your favorite streams?
Well, all of the streams are my favorites. That's why they're in the book. the paddling routes, I did not specifically list paddling routes. What I did was I outlined some reaches of water, you know, maybe 2 miles here, 2 miles there, that could be waded, could be paddled, or maybe even bank fished. And I have icons in the book that suggest what I think would be the best way to do it based on historical flows and difficulty and portages and things like that. I did provide, we have 4 overview maps in the book, but that's mostly just to orient people to where these locations are. But there are latitude and longitude coordinates for every spot mentioned in the book, and also some features like low-head dams that someone might want to portage around. And if there's a portage coming up, I try to let people know, hey, you need to get over to River Right, take your boat out, walk around the dam, and put it back in. I don't want anyone to be out there enjoying the river that I suggested and get surprised going over a dam like that. But there are some terrific paddling opportunities here in Central Texas. And I think our future titles in the series, the Local Angler series, will probably focus more on paddling and floating some streams than wading.
You've already mentioned that women and children are involved in this sport, and you actually include a list of tips for taking the kids. Can you give us one or two?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing for me is be patient, you know. I think you probably remember, Dan, when we were kids, if our parents or grandparents took us fishing, they told us we had to be quiet or it would scare the fish. I'm not sure that actually happened. I think they just wanted some peace. I don't think the fish mind so much. So I don't try to keep my kids quiet, but I do try to be very patient with them and to realize that if I am taking them fishing, and this is changing as they get older, but especially when they were younger, 4 and 5 and 6 years old, that I'm not going to get a lot of fishing time in. It's going to be about, you know, trying to match the experience to their attention span. And then when they want to throw rocks or chase frogs or jump in the water and swim, I have to be okay with that. We did institute a fish first, swim later rule for obvious reasons, but it's the fish first part doesn't last very long, at least initially.
Okay, I want to tell our listeners, you're listening to Travelitch Radio with Dan Schlossberg. Keita Roberts is off tonight. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the archive show on Facebook. And we're talking with Aaron Reed, the author of Fly Fishing Often and Central Texas. Aaron, what kind of fish swim in the rivers and streams of Central Texas? And also, is it true you can catch up to a dozen different species on a successful day? I hear the Guadalupe bass and chinchlid, is that correct, are native to the United States.
Yeah, so we have a huge variety of species, at least 5 species of sunfish in most streams, largemouth bass, which you'll find all over the country, Guadalupe bass, which is found nowhere else in the world but central Texas, Rio Grande cichlids, which is a subtropical fish that is, or it's a family of fishes. Oscars, for instance, a popular aquarium fish, are cichlids, Mayan cichlids, obviously. Tilapia are cichlids from Africa and Asia. But Rio Grande cichlids are the only cichlid species that are native to the United States. And that's actually southern Texas. They were transplanted to central Texas back in the 1920s and have done well here. But you've also got carp, catfish, suckers, drum, freshwater drum. You never really know what you might catch. And it's one of the joys of fishing these warm water streams. Even in our one trout stream on the Guadalupe River, you may also catch striped bass, smallmouth bass, Guadalupe bass, I mean, any number of species. A lot of trout streams, particularly in the western U.S., are pretty much salmonid monocultures. I mean, they have trout. They have one native species of trout and maybe one or two introduced species of trout and maybe a species of chub or something. And that's it. That's all that lives there. Here, our rivers are just absolutely full of life, and you just never know what you're going to catch.
Speaking about catching something, do you catch your fish for sport, for food, or both? And do you offer any recipes in your book?
You know, I primarily fish for sport, you know, catch and release in freshwater. And that has a lot more to do with being lazy, too lazy to clean a mess of fish than it does with, you know, any concern that some of these species cannot sustain some harvest. An exception is white bass, which we target in the springtime when they spawn in the rivers. And of course, I keep fish in saltwater as well. I think a lot of times fly anglers get a little bit precious about the fish and forget that at a really basic level, this is still a blood sport. So it's probably good to, you know, keep a couple of fish every now and then and enjoy nature's bounty that way. But primarily I practice catch and release and try to treat the fish well enough that I can come back and catch them again.
How does fly fishing compare to deep sea fishing? I know one big advantage of fly fishing is not getting seasick.
Yeah, that's true. Also, the fish are smaller and there are a lot more of them. You don't spend a lot of time waiting for a reel to go off. You're not trolling. You're actively sight casting or stalking the fish and either walking or paddling. So it's a lot more active. It's also a lot cheaper. You're not paying for fuel or a captain and a deckhand. So there's that going for it as well.
We're talking with Aaron Reed, the author of Fly Fishing Austin and Central Texas. Aaron, do you list angler-friendly hangouts in your book? And is it a good thing or a bad thing to have other anglers on the same turf, or should I say the same water?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, Dan. I mean, it's definitely a good thing. Our rivers are hugely underutilized. I know there are places in the Northeast, for instance, up in your neck of the woods where, you know, if there's a salmon run, you may have anglers just shoulder to shoulder in the river, you know, kind of combat fishing. That almost never happens down here. And on any of these streams in the book, you can go all day and maybe see one other person or no other people. So all of our rivers could stand to have more people know them and to love them and to be able to speak for them. So there's that. The angler-friendly hangouts, again, it's just a small sampling of all of the terrific breweries and dive bars and distilleries and restaurants we have in the area. Not as many as we had before the pandemic, unfortunately, but still a bunch holding on. And these are places where you can go in and you know, relive the day with your friends, post up your social media posts, and they don't care if you walk in damp and your hands smell a little funny.
So actually, fly fishing Austin and Central Texas is something you can do right now, even with the pandemic going, because it's easy to keep 6 feet of separation.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, you want at least, you know, you want more than that, you know, or someone's going to end up with a hook in the back of the neck. So, you know, Ooh. It's kind of, we kind of like to say that, it's the original social distancing activity. I mean, first of all, a bunch of us fly fish because, you know, we just enjoy our own company or the company of just a few other people. Otherwise, we'd belong to a bowling league or maybe a softball team. So it is something of a solitary activity or an activity you do with just a few other people. But mostly just the mechanics of a fly cast, you know, which requires you to carry a lot of line in the air. Means that you don't want to be too close to someone else or you'll get caught in their back cast.
Okay, just a few minutes left, but I've got to hear about the hairy man of Round Rocks. Is that like the local version of Sasquatch?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the best I can tell, the legend involves an orphan child who was raised by squirrels or raccoons or something along the creek or along Brushy Creek and without the benefit of a barber back in the frontier days. So, you know, how much of it is true and how much of it was cooked up by the local neighborhood association to support their annual festival, I don't know. But what is indisputable is that back in the 1800s, people would journey up from Austin to picnic on Brushy Creek and fish in Brushy Creek and swim in Brushy Creek. And it was a stop on the Chisholm Trail, the old Chisholm Cattle Trail, and also on the covered wagon routes going north. And you can still see those wagon ruts in the limestone of the creek bed there. It's a pretty cool place.
Aaron, I know you're a founding member of the Texas Streams Coalition, so I'm sure you want to protect the natural habitat of the water creatures, correct?
Yeah, that's true. You know, Central Texas is growing by leaps and bounds. We've got just a ton of development going on, people coming in from all over the country, other parts of Texas, for our great quality of life here and in large part because of all the green space and the rivers. So, you know, we understand people have to live places as well, but we would, you know, really love to ensure that there's adequate riparian buffers, that good systems are in place to contain and filter stormwater runoff, and that wastewater is adequately treated, and that there are redundancies in place in case of a power outage and we don't end up dumping raw sewage into these streams. So those are our main concerns, and I think that many of the developers and certainly the local governments are sensitive to those.
Okay, unfortunately, we're out of time, so I want to thank you. Our guest tonight has been Aaron Reed, author of Fly Fishing Austin in Central Texas. Thanks for joining us on Travel With Radio.
Hey, Dan, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much. It was a real honor to get to talk to you tonight.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it, too. Thinking about gifts for Father's Day or graduation, consider my book, The New Baseball Bible, an unorthodox illustrated history that's not only the most unusual baseball book ever published, but costs less than a sawbuck. Such a deal. Order on Amazon.com today as a gift for a special someone or even for yourself. And that's it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Next week, we'll talk to Patrick Sherwin, CEO of Go Sun. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, speaking also from a beautiful and talented but absent co-host, Keita Roberts, a.k.a. Girl Carnivore, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.